welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, your agent in Washington, D.C., beaming to you. So the prospect of the election can easily elicit cringing conniption fits if viewed through the lens of mere rational sanity. We go, I love Andy Borowitz, his recent article, the 2016 elections will cost over $5 billion. It's a good thing our schools and roads and world peace are in excellent shape, or I'd be pissed, says Andy. We love flag activist Bree Newsom, follows in the footsteps of powerful women in the black community who forever altered history, said Reverend Jennifer Bailey, a minister in the AME Church. She says women like Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, Fannie Lou Hamer, and the unsung saints whose names history will never know. For centuries, black women have called upon the divine to make a way out of no way, and we have always known that faith without embodied action is dead and results in dead black bodies lying in the streets. So here we are, and I'm about to bring in our splendid ally and guest, Pat Ewing, but first just a little bit of woof here. So part of the dynamic Saturn, you know, our autonomy, how we define leadership, is retrograde. It is about inhaling, insourcing authority and leadership from wherever we've outsourced it. We know that part of the dynamic of this summer is it's like waking up in the morning or as a person or a country or whatever and saying, here's me, there's the structure of my life, do they match? And the degree to which they don't is where energy for change lies. I love the psychological study that said the degree to which people are ironic is the degree to which they have the capacity for compassion, because it's surprising at first. But to be ironic, we have to be holding two stories at once. Again, usually what is and what should be, or what people say it is and how it actually is. And again, rather than conniption fits, that's sort of the beginning, it's the discrepancy where change, revolution, freedom, trickster lives. I love the ironic bumper sticker I saw once that just said, be nice to America or we'll bring democracy to your country. I go, yeah. And I do, in the course of our hour, I want to bring up one of the most fabulous ways to honor July 4th. We are July 2nd. We are in anticipation. But Zora Neale Hurston just wrote the most fantastic essay, important for everybody, in her book, The Complete Stories, on High John the Conqueror, who is the trickster redeemer of the South. And she says, High John the Conqueror came to be a man, and a mighty man at that, but he was not a natural man in the beginning. First off, he was a whisper, a will to hope, a wish to find something worthy of laughter and song, and then the whisper put on flesh. His footsteps sounded across the world in a low but musical rhythm, as if the world he walked on was a singing drum. The black folks had an irresistible impulse to laugh. High John the Conqueror was a man in full, and had come to live and work on the plantations, and all the slave folks knew him in the flesh. The sign of this man was a laugh, and his singing cymbal was a drumbeat. It was sure to be heard when and where the work was the hardest and the lot most cruel. She goes on, you know, the crucial thing about High John, he could beat the unbeatable. He was top superior to the whole mess of sorrow. He could bear it, and what made it so cool, finish everything off with a laugh. He was there are many things, but his crucial phrase is hitting a straight lick with a crooked stick, winning the jackpot with no other stake but a laugh, really winning in a permanent way, for he was winning the soul of black people whole and free. For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? He would have nothing but a cruel, vengeful, grasping monster come to power. John the Conqueror was a bottom fish. He was deep. He had the wisdom tooth of the East in his head. And it goes on, she finishes, again, here's our rousing from Zora Neale Hurston and the tradition of black wisdom and trickster redeemers all over the world. She says, so the brother and sister in black offers to these United States the source of courage that endures and laughter, High John the Conqueror. If the news from overseas reads bad and the nation inside seems like it's stuck in the tar baby, listen hard and you will hear John the Conqueror treading on his singing drum. You will know then that no matter how bad things look, it will be worse for those who seek to oppress. Even if your hair comes yellow and your eyes are blue, John the Conqueror will be working for you just the same. From his secret place, he is working for all America now. We are all his kinfolk. Just be sure our cause is right, and then you can lean back and say, John the Conqueror would know what to do in a case like this, and he would finish it off with a laugh. White America, take a laugh out of our black mouths and win. Win peace for all beings. We give you Hi, John the Conqueror. Thank you, Zora Neale Hurston. So, more than perfectly, our brewing our antidote, we're calling today's show Metaphysical America. Why not? Taken from the secret chart of America, derived from the back of a $100 bill for its birth time, which gives 9 Scorpio rising, whose image is fellowship supper reunites old comrades. Why not? You know, and if it's not true, let's make it true. So we welcome Pat Ewing, political, spiritual, Coyote Network news correspondent, yes, as we begin our mythic news campaign coverage that we inaugurate, magnetize, and animate the esoteric soul of America. It doesn't matter if you don't believe in it. Nobody needs to believe in it. Let's make it happen, you know, composting the up-to-no-good into nutrient for a renaissance of reverent ingenuity dedicated to collective well-being of all the flora and fauna. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm so happy to be here.
Excellent. All right. So there's so many places, you know, as you can see, I'm surrounded by charts, which may or may not be useful to us. The sky story is so heartening. We know in the West, you know, still we get to see Venus and Jupiter conjoin, trining Uranus. Much great goodness about equality and peace and education that we do want to honor. And as you often remind us to compost our, we'll get to that. But maybe begin with the beautiful story of your daughters.
Oh, I would love to share that. My daughters are 13 and 12, and in any home today, there's a great deal of talk about why does our society, why does our culture treat certain people better and certain people worse? My daughters are very interested in, because they come home from school and say, talking about gay rights, gay marriage, children calling each other gay as if it's a bad word, and why do they do that? We have these conversations, as many, many homes do. And because of that, I was very surprised by their reaction to marriage equality, the Supreme Court's decision. First, they knew about it, and they followed it, and they were palpably relieved, because what I came to understand from their standpoint is the pressure in middle school to be straight is so great, and it's they took it as such a burden that they couldn't have time to understand who they were innately, and they just were so excited to have that pressure off of them, to have to walk down a very specific road because the entire culture demanded it of them, that they were just incredibly relieved for themselves, for their friends. And they said, well, we don't have to make this decision now. We don't have to understand ourselves. We can still be 12 and 13. And I was beautifully struck by that, because I just didn't understand how much pressure I was under, other people were under, what we actually do to our children at such an early age to demand something from them that they really may not be ready to understand. And they do have friends who are going through, understand themselves, what they want out of the world and what their sexual orientation is that isn't what is demanded of them. And they were relieved for them as well, because they felt, wow, we have a choice. We have choices. We can fully understand who we are. And that I didn't expect.
And they made an incredibly fabulous 6-second video.
Yes. Well, my one daughter actually, she won a contest making vines for drag queens.
What?
At 13.
That's Adorable.
It's adorable.
Remind some of us old fogies, a Vine is a...
6-second video.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Vine allows you, it's an app, and it allows you to create 6-second videos. And she actually submitted some of her videos for, because she is into RuPaul's Drag Race, and she's into learning more about drag queens, and she submitted it, and she actually won. And so she's been doing more of them. And so, anyway, she...
That's great.
Yeah, I know, it's fun.
And again, we just you know, put out our elbows gracefully and go, more room for everybody. And in pondering our collective global well-being and the little strange divisions into countries and all, but there are spirits and qualities, and we can certainly be critical, and that's important, of many things. And we'll get to your wonderful contribution about leadership, maybe in 2 seconds here, that all leaders are designed to be disappointing. It's perfect that way. Oh, but I don't mean to. Spoiler alert. Yeah, again, that idea of, you know, more room. And I love that your daughters love drag queens, because drag queens intrinsically playful.
Yeah, the humor of it is wonderful.
And it's a liberation. And it's like,
exactly.
You know, fabulous. You know,
breaking down stereotypes.
Say what?
Breaking down every stereotype in the most joyful way.
In a high John the Conqueror kind of way,
exactly.
Which is, you know, you liberate even the tyrant. It's sort of the, you know, when Eddie Izzard was more transvestite and he said, I'm not gay, I'm a male lesbian. You know, again, it mainstream, just more room for everybody. And that is the tide that we want to remember, you know, that we all good-hearted beings, and inviting the good-heartedness out of everybody, may it be so, you know, we are the wind, and what we think of as politicians are the sail. So you've been asking me about Hillary Clinton, why is she tacking to the Bernie Sanders realm?
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren realm, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
She started out with Elizabeth, she's gone to Bernie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's again, we want to look at many things. I am, again, surrounded by charts, which astrological charts, which may or may not be useful. But Bernie is, you know, a Virgo, as in the tradition of this country. Many guys who know how to get stuff done, LBJ, there's a good part of him as well as a bad part. You know, but he is a Moon, Mars, Aries, kick-butt guy. And when Hillary announces, just for the fun of it, you know, again, what is it? Oh, the sun in Aries is on Bernie Sanders' moon in Mars. And anyway, so it doesn't mean anything necessarily, except that we kind of come to understand the design pattern going, yeah, let's have Bernie Sanders, who's the only enthusiasm out there at the moment. 10,000 people showed up in Wisconsin. I love what Rachel Maddow, Aries kick butt woman, has been saying, going, look at Bernie. Look, you know, look at all these other people, you know, even Hillary, like there's a, you know, maybe 60 people. There are 10 people. You know, look at Bernie, 3,000 people. They had to move it into, they, I love the fact that they organized all these things the day before. Go, Bernie. I love that. I love a procrastinator and a let-it-slide kind of guy. And he's completely coming alive, you know, now by transit, this fabulous Venus-Jupiter conjunction in the sky and Uranus, you know, sextiling his Jupiter. He's got the story and the details. And apparently, even though, like in Wisconsin, he gives his routine speech, but 10,000 people show up because it's a thing and a symbol. You know, and he's definitely tapped in. So what I've often said, and I think in the last show we did together, you know, because every now and then it's true, I do gaze at, you know, well, the Republican doofuses and criminals and incompetent criminals, and then also Hillary Clinton, and I do every now and then get a conniption fit going, oh, no, just take this cup from us, oh, no, and then go, and, you know, miracles, I'm all in favor of miracles, you know, Bernie Sanders would be a miracle, but sufficiently potent now. And then if expediency is Hillary Clinton's, you know, befoibment on a surface personality level, then it is back to us to make the good expedient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I want to toss to you the what you have so much to say about the nature of Saturn or leadership, that we insource it and overcome our disappointment thing. You know,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the nature of leadership, the nature of political leaders, our political leaders at this point, in our history and in our evolution, is no longer one way, where you have this well-packaged person where you everyone is complicit in building them up onto a pedestal and allowing them to stay there. What we did then, once we got over that, we started taking the pedestal apart. You know, that's what the internet was helpful. And then we watched them crash and burn a little bit and see if they could. Where we're going next is to hold both their foibles and their promise in the same, in our heart, together. We were no longer ever going to have that idea of this perfect person who's going to lead us into the future. Because we are now, what we're working on as evolutionary, from an evolutionary standpoint, is insourcing our own, as you would say, Saturn, and I would say leadership, our own self, so that we are the ones who are holding that leadership, are actually being and owning who we are. You would say insourcing, I would probably say owning. So that we are that, and that when something comes up, we say, oh, I can't stand when someone does whatever. Instead of saying, I don't like that person, they got to stop that. Where we're evolving to is, that's interesting. I'm not really sure I like what they said. What does that say? Is there anything I need to check internally in myself that would cause me to react that way? So where we're going is, yes, somebody can absolutely trigger you. Somebody can actually say dumb things or say things that are mean or don't help us evolve. However, we also need to take a step back and say, what does that really mean for me? Who am I in this play? We are all in the play together. What is my role in this play?
So I can telepathic contact with our dynamic listenership. I can hear people say, but people also do terrible things, right? And we do want to. I mean, I think the Saturn summer, you know, deep layers underneath everything, inward to redefine leadership for ourselves and for others, you know, and grow that form, but, you know, beneath depression, beneath conniption fits, you know, into what you're addressing, you know, complicitous creating. Why would we direct the movie this way? So, for instance, a lot of people were going, well, Barack Obama is all very well, is on gay things, but here's where he said he didn't believe in gay marriage, and, you know, 8 years ago. And we go, well, yeah, people can change. And some thought that came and went away. But, let's say there's a million places I want to go. Oh, but it's I love complicity. I love the term complicity. Not shame, not blame, but whatever is going on, we are complicitous. And once we play with that idea, we can inhale, withdraw our creative complicity from an undesirable, and exhale into a desirable. I wonder why I or we would be outsourcing leadership to tyrannical sociopathic dingbats who have lost a sense of kinship. I wonder why we would have done that. In case we have, let's inhale it and define the job. You know.
Yes, it is a matter of drawing strong boundaries of what is acceptable and unacceptable.
Yeah, like elder elephants.
However,
going, hey,
yes.
Cut that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course. We also need to look at how we're doing it. I trust that we're sophisticated enough, that we're growing enough, that our hearts are getting bigger and bigger, that if you say you're on Facebook and somebody says something really, you know, snarky and you're like, yes, I love that. Well, I'm going to, you know, forward it with another zinger. Are you really adding culturally to our healing? Or is it a very short-term power play to make you sort of feel better, where a piece of chocolate might do the same thing?
Better.
Maybe.
Better.
Yeah,
go ahead,
there you go.
Go ahead.
So when you say, you said two different things, which is not, for me you did. Snark is one thing, not adding to the public debate in a way that we can constructively evolve is different than stopping a tyrannical leader from, you know, killing everyone within its country. So that has to be done. You know, we have to sometimes you know, draw strong limits. What I'm asking people to do is to hold people in a more complex way. And it's not easy. And I had shared with you a story, which I would love to throw out now, which is I went to Monticello on Sunday and to Jefferson's home, Thomas Jefferson's home. And, you know, I had been there years and years and years ago. I took my daughters. And the first thing we did was took a slave tour. And it was a very unvarnished, very factual report on and history of, based on all the work they've done, the archaeology they've done, and what they've dug up and what they've learned about this slave owner. So here you go, and you have this entire tour of a slave owner on a plantation, which is Thomas Jefferson as owning 600 human beings. And then you go into his house as the third president of this great man who wrote the Declaration of Independence and, you know, set us free from onto this path that we're still on. And holding both of those in my head at the same time, in my heart, it wanted to burst. It wasn't easy. But this man is incredibly complicated. And holding those 600 people the way he did, even unlawfully, was a horror. And I would not agree with any of the decisions he made to do that. And on the other side of it, he wrote the Declaration of Independence.
And he dies on July 4th.
Exactly.
With John Adams, same day.
So what I'm asking from a leadership perspective is two things. That we understand that people are incredibly complicated, and there are leaders who come in just to do one thing at one time. And that's their sort of role, and that's their job.
Which is why, you know, do you approve or disapprove of Thomas Jefferson? Completely irrelevant. I want to throw all approval, disapproval, because it draws out just the simplistic worst of all of us. You know, do you approve or disapprove of chocolate? Do you approve or disapprove of, you know, war? Again, the backstage gods don't really care if we approve or disapprove. How are we willing to work with everything in some way? So the befoibelment and the complexity and the contradiction of Thomas Jefferson, well, that gets us into, you know, Pluto is, the sun is about to oppose Pluto on Monday, July 6th, but in the solar return for, you know, America, sun opposite Pluto. Now you can see it in the toxic news, you know, oh, terror alerts, oh, you know, be scared of yourself, you know. But it does bring me back to 2001 when they began to intimidate, try to steal people's Saturn. If you make people afraid, you can make them imprisoned, and all the codes. And that's when on this show in 2001 we began declaring code hot pink. We're declaring code hot pink, which is everybody remember they're part of the same dream together and their heart opens in ever expansiveness, and we understand that things are volatile in direct proportion to the force of their exclusion. There we go, code hot pink. And that later became code pink. They dropped the hot because apparently code hot pink was a porno site. But anyway, so anyway, we want to keep, you know, we declare code, you know, fill in the blank, everybody's creativity. But also, so Pluto is, however, volatility and journey to the underworld. And thanks always to wonderful Karen Sanders, and what a delight it is to segue from her show going, "Be calm to make right decisions in the midst of explosions," said Karen in the last hour. We go, I love you, Karen Sanders. Yeah, the medicine on many forms. But we can bring up, I love the quip, you know, nostalgia sure ain't what it used to be. You know, and because so many people out there in, you know, a conversation or whatever go, oh, if only we had an FDR, if only we had a JFK. And I go, well, you know, you'd hate them too. You know, because they did good stuff and they did bad stuff. And
FDR,
they betrayed,
what, put how many Japanese Americans in internment and stole their homes?
Well, and violated
their livelihoods? There's a lot of...
There's a lot.
The only way we can really truly put someone on a pedestal is from the perspective of the past. So a lot of times we romance these leaders, but it's always from the when time has gone by, and then we'll put them up on a pedestal and, oh, well. But if we really look at their day-to-day decision-making, and you... If FDR were the internet, can you imagine?
Oh, yeah. Well, because, you know, the really pretty great show on the Roosevelts that Ken Burns did, it was pretty prodigious.
That was fabulous.
It was pretty prodigious. And I grew up sort of around remnants of decaying remnants of that ancestral lineage going, so I have some of the backstory. And my dad, you know, I'm very young, but he was very old when I was born. And my dad did work with FDR as a New Dealer. So all of that. And yes, in the political realm, we remember, you know, James Carse's great book, Finite and Infinite Games, and he says, beware of status. If you're elected president, or you put a PhD beside your name, or CEO, or head of anything, or, you know, chief of this or that, you're in prison. Because the lure to enter the finite game, to surrender infinite, he says finite game is about winning, which is again the ridiculous horse race framing of any election. Infinite game about keeping everything in play. You know, as wonderful listener Kate Henke said when she was getting all grumpy at rich people, she goes, 1%. She goes, as a species, we're the 1%. We're the 1% on this planet, you know. And that's, I think, what you were suggesting, going, well, why am I so triggered about the 1%? Because it's us.
Mm-hmm.
As well as a sociopolitical important analysis. I mean, all of that. But yes, complexity of thinking, flexible, that's the antidote to conniption fits. You know?
The flexibility also allows you, hopefully, to include the positive that's going on and the changes that are going on, because the world is truly changing and we want to be part of that change. We want to be part of the openness of not understanding right now. Do we really understand what gender is anymore? We don't really understand what gender really means. We used to think it was gender was male and female and they were supposed to get married and have kids. And that's what we thought. Now our culture, we've thrown it up in the air, and that's a great place to be. So, because people can be more of who they are and who they want to be and share it with somebody and love someone that they are in connection with. So we've thrown that up in the air. Wonderful. There are other positive things going on, even healthcare, the win of healthcare this week. There was even a Saudi prince who's putting $32 billion, his entire fortune, $32 billion, to the empowerment of women. He said Bill Gates sort of, I love what he's doing. I want to help the empowerment of women. I don't know what that means yet. But he's taking his entire fortune, asked his son and his wife, because they're the ones who are supposed to inherit this $32 billion, and they said yes, putting it in a...
Well, they must have said, just put a little $1 billion
well,
to one side.
Well, probably, you know, yeah. Well, I'm sure $32 billion, he probably can earn another $32, right? Whatever. But $32 billion of a Saudi prince for the empowerment of girls and women. Now, I'm not sure what that means in context, but lovely.
Lovely.
We want to encourage that. We want to see more of that and understand that in an adult world, complexity lives and people are not just one thing.
And part of a whole, you know, when Malala was the beautiful guest on Jon Stewart's show on June 18th after the horrible massacre in South Carolina, it was a profound show. And Malala was so well-spoken, 17-year-old who'd been shot point-blank in the head and come back. You know, how do you deal with peace? How do you deal with the Taliban who tried to kill you? And she said, you know, I used to want to throw shoes at them, but I realized I would then be them. And the only solution, the only way for peace is education. And there we can see it in the sky, Venus Peace on its way to Jupiter, education and stories and compassion and expanded stories and holding complexity. We go, that's so beautiful. And also, you know, we want to thank all the ancestors, you know, the Kinsey report way back, really pretty great movie, Kinsey, about where he was establishing there is no straight or gay, it's all a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There is no noun, it's all a verb of changing, you know, more room. It was pretty wild and radical and opening up then. The movie's great because it addresses a lot of the complexity about, you know, are you losing intimacy in this sort of study of sex detached. Anyway, it's a good movie over there. More, you know, so Saturn would say as many forms of relating as there are people, let the inward dedication grow the form for each relationship. You know, and again, as opposed to trying to stuff something into a pre-existing form. So we're at that moment. We're going to have a short-ish, a two-minute musical break in a moment along those lines. It's one of my favorite songs. It really is about, you know, it's an Independence Day song in a way. It's not everybody's Saturn form of how they choose to relate, but it's one available. And we do want to have a buffet of possibilities, you know, for the likes of you, our great guest, Pat Ewing, and your beautiful daughters, going more room, more room. So here's a wonderful break music song about more room. Was fun. That's Katie Oslin singing Live Close By, Visit Often, That'll Work For Me, a kind of independent song. It comes from Kate Hepburn being asked, like, do you want to get married ever? And she's like, God, no. I want somebody who lives close by and visits often. And so our wonderful guest today is Pat Ewing, political spiritual research correspondent with a great backstage resume that, like all of us reinventing self, what do we want to do now? What is our angle of relating? So where we just left it, and your beautiful daughters and how they are celebrating the Supreme Court decision about gay marriage because it just gives everybody more freedom. I love that. And I love the beautiful vine that your daughter made, which people can find as do you know if they want to. We can think about how people might see the vine. But yes, we were just where we left it before Katie Oslin, Live Close By, Visit Often. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey on KPFA 94.1. With Malala, you know, she was saying the only way to peace is education, larger expansive, and not being hot reactive. And then, of course, her foundation is for the education of women. And that's also Michelle Obama just now in Africa, also, you know, education of women, big theme. So we come to the complexity. I want to sort of pitch it to you that, you know, how we decide in a calm way, as Karen Sanders was telling us last hour, calm to make right decisions in the midst of volatility. We want this election, which looks like it could be an increasingly hot, reactive, ridiculous clown hate fest. And as we bring up the complex subject of, well, Bernie Sanders, yes, and Hillary Clinton, and manners. We want to critique Hillary, but not to hate her. Yeah. She's such a hate magnet. And the segue also is about she's herself. We are all ourselves. But for many, and part of her role in the mystery play, she is a symbol of women.
Absolutely.
So there's a customized hatred of Hillary Clinton going Monsanto and corrupt and you know, I'm going to go, let's have discernment without the hate, but it can be fierce insight and blessing. And then there's just the hate. Yeah.
You don't have, what I find fascinating about her is you don't, there isn't somebody in public life that we've seen grow up. We've seen it in child stars growing up to see, you know, whether they become successes. But if you think about Hillary Clinton and you think about where she started as the, you know, when she was helping her husband run for governor for the first time, she has been part of our public life, and she's had a public life for a very long time in politics. And most people don't last this long. And she's had this amazing career, and she's opened up doors for women, and she's done a lot of amazing things. And what I'm interested in with her right now is, because a lot of people can't do this, she's actually reading the times, and she's changing, some may say expediently, I'm really not so sure. I think she's going from motherhood to crone, and she's doing it very elegantly. In a sense, I'm feeling from her, she is more taking on the leadership role that a woman normally would have in a Native American or a sort of society, in which she is now in a leadership position, having had the experiences she's had, and she's using them. And that isn't, everybody doesn't do that. I mean, if you look at a lot of other leaders, whether it's a Bush or a, you know, you could even say of Bill Clinton or other leaders, they have in their old age, and in their older years, not everybody's open to change, and not everybody's open to reading what's happening in the world and compassionately and interestingly moving towards something that could work now. And I see a different Hillary right now. I see a different candidate.
You actually know her.
Well, when I worked at the White House, worked with her team. And what struck me was when she became Secretary of State is how here's how I judge. One of the ways I judge, and this is very particular and peculiar to me, and that is, how do they treat their staff?
Yeah, no.
How they treat their team.
Very important.
Are people loyal to them? Do they help people rise in their careers? Is it something that is actually well organized, or is it just a muddle of people getting together and everything's chaos? And when she was Secretary of State, she did an amazing job of bringing people together. Now, we may not like the policies that came out of it, but there was something there where she was on her own to really see that she could actually govern, and she was doing a good job of really putting a very strong organization together.
And I just have to do a public service announcement, because I can tell that five of our listeners are now kicking their wastebaskets. So I just want to remind everybody, we all have a harumphitude composter and a conniption fit composter, and we just nom, 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 nom. Okay, now back to you.
Well, that's actually what we were talking about in the first half hour. But what I would like to say on this part is, you see somebody changing, you see somebody growing, and I'm interested in you didn't see that in 2008. You saw the old Hillary that came directly out of the White House with her husband and doing the same approach, the same campaign, the same people. And
she did black magic.
Oh, my gosh.
She was like, really, nothing more dangerous than a witch that doesn't know she's a witch. And
Hillary's
a witch.
I think she's accepted that she is one now.
Excellent.
And
What
I'm talking about is more of the subtle change, the more subtle changes, and I'm interested to see what else she can bring to bear, because I'm actually surprised at the team that she's put together. I'm surprised at
MOOC and all.
Yes, and she's putting people who actually work well together. That was not a requirement in 2008. It was only a requirement that you win. And she did not put a requirement that people had to get along and develop a structure and an organization where people could actually thrive. She's doing that now. She did not look at sorry about that. I just hit my little mic.
That's
sorry.
Right.
She's looking at where the country actually is to start a conversation from. And she didn't really do that in 2008 either. And having lived through the Gore campaign in 2000, that was the same case there. Not looking at where the country was, who this candidate was. There was no self-exploration. There was no understanding of who they were leading. And I see somebody who's actually looking at who they're leading and how to get their head around who this country really is, and that, I think, is valuable.
I want to, again, the many layers of language and esoterica and metaphysics that we all have available to us. So, yes, if I don't know anything, which is often how I like to approach charts, and look at her chart, October 26, 1947, probably 7 p.m. in Chicago. Chicago again. So the image for her son in Scorpio is, you know, a happy house-raising party, organizing the community for group endeavor. We go, huh. Now, what I would say to anybody born October 26th is that Neptune dreams, vision, how a culture tells itself its own story for the first time in 165 years is in Pisces. It's trining her son, and we would say to her and to many of us, imagine that who you really are is about to be welcome. You know, the deepest, most exiled. So you can be a witch. I mean, it's certainly what the right wing thinks, you know, but we go, yes, we won't tell anybody, but between us, a wink, wink, Hillary, you are a witch. The image for your Venus in Scorpio, which was the sorceress woman who was castigated in the Middle Ages, we want to understand Inquisition versus critique, you know, because she's an Inquisition attractor as well. But the image for that is a woman made fertile by her own spirit, a woman married to herself, and she certainly has been.
Right, truly.
Yeah.
I guess I would say that she's coming into her own, and it'll be interesting to see what she does with herself and how she moves from here on here forward.
And all of us, I guess, you know, dancing with history. I mean, I do want to, you know, go back to the rousing enthusiasm of Bernie Sanders and all that he gives voice to, because I think it's really great, because he's not really a charismatic figure, right? He's like,
but he's a lucid figure, and
yes,
his truth telling is palpable.
Right.
When he speaks, you can hear the truth. You can hear what somebody who has their pulse on. A nerve, almost, as to what needs to be told.
Right. And there's a great, you know, again, when we look to things just to tell us, you know, sane, reverent common sense that we'd know anyway. But Bernie Sanders, you know, declared his presidency on April 8th, 2015 at 11:55 p.m. And we go, cool. Which is also, it's an Aries. He's double Sagittarius, moon, he is... It's what public life should be. I mean, an educational, smart discourse conversation. And the fact that, again, that is magnetic. People want smart conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the show where I hosted Henry Giroux 3 weeks ago, really, really smart left guy. You know, he was like, you know, education. And we were, not in a nostalgic way, but we were reminding, you know, in the 30s and even 40s in this country before it got clamped down, you know, working class people everywhere were meeting in theaters at night in Providence and Baltimore and Santa Rosa and everything and going, you know, how should we govern? You know, passionate, smart, informed, educated, historically, whatever, you know, roots. And Bernie really talks about that. I loved somebody going, but you're a socialist. And he goes, well, let me define that for you. And he's a Virgo. He's a definer. And he says, you know, what it means is I think everybody should have health care. I like Scandinavia. And I think all tuition should be free. And people go, oh, well, yes. The baton from Obama to him, mythologically, you know, when I first heard Obama in 2004, covering the Democratic Convention in Boston for as part of the Pacifica quirky team, but going, wow. And then noticing, you know, who is this guy, Barack Obama? Barack Obama's Mars is 22 Virgo. When this country was born, its Neptune, its dream, its vision, its soul is 22 Virgo. So I go, okay, he's Marsing, he's animating the desirable vision of the country as inclusive. Bernie, his north node of moon, his life work, is 22 Virgo. So Bernie's doing a good thing. He's a great thing. As a Virgo kind of medicine man, smart guy, and rousing, and passionate about justice. And again, yes, everybody, not perfect on Palestine, not perfect on nobody's perfect. I want you to come back to tell us why it's important that nobody's perfect. Well, maybe now.
Okay.
Tell us why everybody, compost disappointment, which is a word that means I am powerless in the underworld. It's like, okay, team, let's quit bespelling ourselves, for goodness sake, and have more language. Anyway, why is it perfect that all leaders are disappointing and befoibled?
Because it allows us to be ourselves truly. It allows us to inhale and to bring it back to ourselves, our own set of leadership. What we have is all over the world is that we are happy to and readily do give away our own leadership, our own power to somebody else on the outside, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Attila the Hun. It doesn't matter. What we're learning now, where our world is changing, not just our country, but where we need to grow as a species, is to be our own leader, inhale it back in, be our own leader. Therefore, our leaders anymore are going to disappoint us. They're going to have to, because we're not supposed to project onto somebody what you project when you're 3 years old and you look up at your parent and say, that's my world. That's not what we're supposed to be doing anymore. Our world is changing so that we have to be responsible and really know who we are and what we are and stop projecting onto others. And that's where sometimes the hot critique, if we look at where you want to give hot critique and unhelpful critique or deciding whether it is helpful or unhelpful critique, is, are those places where you're leaking your leadership? Are they places where you're leaking your energy? Are those places where you could just, people are complicated. If we didn't have, what if Barack Obama was only here to make sure the country didn't fall off a cliff? And that's it. What if? What if everything that's been going on in the right with all these guys running around and the things that some of these guys say in the Republican Senate and House is just phenomenal to me. They just decided that they voted 300 and something to 100 that they were, you don't have to put country of origin on beef anymore. Who decides that? How do you even do something like that, right? Yes, exactly. What if they are there to do that so that we would start appreciating Bernie Sanders? That we would actually start appreciating who we are as human beings and our humanity. That we appreciate a Malala, that we appreciate the fact that women need to be educated around the world, that humanity itself becomes important to us, because sometimes you can't make that decision until somebody says to you, it's unimportant, or no, you can't. I'm not going to let you. You're a woman. You're of a different race. You don't look like me. You don't have a big flag in the back of your van, and you don't wear whatever. Therefore, you are not me. Therefore, you have to walk away from me. What if those sorts of examples, even if it's even if it's Donald Trump, who now has lost how much, right? Tell Univision has dropped him.
Macy's
has dropped him. NBC. How much more could he be dropped right now? Because he said a remark that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, wouldn't have been a big deal.
Really?
But today, he's got a piñata out of Mexico that they've made already. That you can buy on the internet.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and then we would say, what if? Again, we just want to prime the pump of what if. What if one of Hillary Clinton's main functions is to prevent the Bushes from seizing more power? And yes, there could be conniption fit people going, but she's a Monsanto person. We go, yes, easy. We want to honor everything. Jeb Bush, these are stupid people. Ignorant, and we know tyranny is compensatory. We need them, as I like to say. That if you're stupid and ignorant, you're more likely to be tyrannical in some way. And Jeb Bush has raised he's on his way to $1 billion. That is a...
He probably called like four people and got that. That's not a lot of work.
Okay, thank you. Right, so there's that. And we go, So yeah, so it's certainly way too soon. This is not a horse race. Who's going to win? You know, all honor to the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, you know, Hillary. The conversation, and I think also what's great about who's showing up for Bernie, and his strategy and his authenticity and the news people's complete disrespect. Oh my God. You know, just really, anyway. Irrelevant.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, into Hasnamus. But is that people really aren't, you know, well, very few, only people who really haven't worked out issues with daddy are projecting, you know, celebrity glamour onto Bernie. They are grateful that a smart conversation is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those 10,000 people turning out in Madison and in Vermont and, you know, the it's the progressive sane realms that he's starting with and then going on to Iowa, it's very smart because, you know, any good gathering is one where everybody gets up and starts talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what they're going to. So now we do have that kind of seed of intelligent conversation, and we're going to keep that alive, and in which the populace is far smarter. You know, and
if we have the power, if we are inhaling our power, and power and leadership are two different things, but if we're inhaling, if all of us are inhaling our leadership back into ourselves, she's not going to want to support Monsanto, you know, Hillary Clinton, if she's president. She's not going to want to.
Or need to.
Need to.
Or
because her life
to,
is going to change, and she's going to change, and she's going to adapt to the world because she's going to, if she sees it differently because it's political, or she sees it differently because she's changed her heart. I don't, whichever one, I'll take either, because we, if the more that we snark, the more that we talk about, the more we snark at this, the more we offer only the worst, or we project onto somebody their motives because, well, she's only going to do this because of whatever, the less power we have, the less, and I had said this to you before, but I want to say it again, that 20 years ago, I would have put this to you in terms of how to create a good set of communication talking points so that the left sounds more relevant, so they're taken more seriously. That's what I would have said 20 years ago, because, you know, you want to be part of the debate. You don't want to be out of the debate. I'm not saying that anymore. What I'm saying is this is internal within each of us to take back our own power and express our own leadership and know what that is. And because the snark itself actually bleeds that away, So I'm saying that together, by truly standing in our own power and our own leadership, one plus one will start being a crowd and start being more and more. And it's just inevitable. And that's where we're going, as more freedom, more choices, and, you know, gender equality is, marriage equality, all of that is a piece, a small piece of that.
That's great. So I am also hereby liberating myself from any imagined or real coddling concern about the people in the audience who are like, and I go, no, I'm not going to we're not going to wuzza you, you know, there you go, okay. Yeah, because we do know the, you know, the criminal and the terrible and the religion. We got, yes, I understand.
If you firmly believe in your heart that that's important, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be important. Monsanto is important.
It is.
It's very,
And the TPP thing about environment and workers, very important. Yeah.
Of course it's important.
Yes.
And what I'm saying something nuanced and a little bit more where I'm at in our evolutionary life, which is that there is an internal piece that we need to know and understand, that sometimes the anger that we're feeling towards somebody else, what is it there? It has a solid, wonderful purpose, but sometimes it's there to trigger us for some other reason, so we release it and feel more powerful ourselves and live more in the moment and more becoming who we are. And it's that sort of internal peace. It's that knowing our power and ourselves that's more important than ragging on somebody. Now, if you take that and use it, and, you know, I'm great at criticizing, and I will, you know, so I'll say, okay, give me just 5 minutes to do this. So let me just criticize for 5 minutes just to get it off my chest. And then sometimes if I allow myself that, an understanding comes and I come to a new place. And but I, you can also be in the situation where someone says, okay, stop, because
well,
it's unhelpful.
Well, is our manner of relating an offering or an imposition? You know, backstage,
yes.
you are, again, offering serves democracy and freedom for all beings, and imposition serves empire, no matter what we call ourselves.
It is the same thing as what the Republicans or the right is doing. It's the same thing if it is an imposition. If it doesn't serve democracy, if it doesn't serve our higher good, does it help me better be a better person? If it does, it serves.
Yeah, and also, right now, Uranus, Trickster, Quintile, Ceres, Demeter, Dwarf Planet, Goddess of the Earth, whose image is the cosmic egg getting ready to hatch, Renaissance. And we go, right, and we are voting for the rest of the flora and fauna on this planet. But when you were saying backstage, like, well, you know, what's a word you prefer, Caroline, to trigger? And I go, well, it's not the meaning equivalent, but what if we playfully, whenever we use the word trigger, use the word liberate, going, wow, what you said really liberated me. You know,
yes.
That'd be fun. Might
yes.
Be fun.
It's like the thank you. When somebody, yes, when someone is triggered, when you hear some awful debate or someone says, well, Monsanto is saving lives because,
yes. No,
one of the things you can do is just to say thank you. Because what is happening right now is that we're cleaning out our closets. In order to move, if we're going to actually evolve as humans, and if we don't evolve the planet, we're going to kill ourselves and the planet anyway. So we're sort of into a forced evolution. If we're going to evolve, we need to clean up the mess. And sometimes what you're seeing, whether it's from the right or something about Monsanto or something else, is actually helpful because it's cleaning up and out and has to be brought out. In order for us to evolve as human beings, we have to understand how we feel about race. We have to. We have to. So sometimes on the what we hear of, you know, with racism or pitting one race against another and people using those words and hiding behind flags and murdering people in cold blood in a church, it is we need to see everything so that we can evolve and move it out. And so when you're hearing that, another thing might be, just a suggestion and might not work or might work for you, is to say thank you when you hear someone saying something really racist or terrible. Because it's the last time, hopefully, you'll ever have to hear that. Because where it's coming from is an old belief that we need to leave. It needs to leave. And it needs to be evolved and needs to be given to some higher source to help us heal it. But unless it's verbalized, unless we know it, it can still stick on our planet and inside us.
And that, and then also the thing that gives me conniption fits until now is even on beautiful Rachel Maddow's show, the ad will switch to SeaWorld. We treat animals so well. And I cannot change the, but I suppose we would go, thank you for revealing your ding battery and your lying lack of concern. Thank you. Anyway, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, and grateful for Pacifica that has no ads. Oh, there we go. So we're on our way out. Again, you know, we are always voting for reality. Every thought, every feeling, every whatever. And of course, we are the agents. You know, right now, any wise people would understand, indigenous people, Saturn retrograde and Venus about to disappear. That was a time for a culture to redefine leadership, as you've been guiding us and encouraging us and liberating us, Pat Ewing, great ally. May we cahoot in perpetuity and plan more of our campaign coverage for this exciting experimental time. Thank you all, team. Thanks so much, Alex Drewinskas in Washington, D.C., and the KPFA team of wise beings out there, always helpful. Thank you so much. It's Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Caroline Casey, Weaver of Context for the Visionary Activist Show. A show that aspires to wed spiritual magic and conscious, compassionate social activism. Join us every Thursday at 2 p.m. as we invoke and implement a more ingeniously cooperative and reverent world.
The candidate nomination period for the Pacifica Local Station Board elections is now open. If you or someone you know is interested in running as a listener or staff candidate, please visit the elections website at elections.pacifica.org to register and download a nomination package. Candidate nominations will be accepted from now until 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 14th. Again, for more information about the election and to download a nomination package, please visit elections.pacifica.org or send an email to nes@pacifica.org.